Today's episode of the Film Stage Roundtable is brought to you by MUBI. For your free 30-day trial, go to MUBI.com/filmstage.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it, that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable. This, of course, is the spin-off to the traditional Film Stage show. On these episodes, instead of doing a full film review, we talk about a broad variety of topics related to film and film culture. With me, your host, Brian J. Rowan, as always, are my two companions. We have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
And the indomitable Bill Graham. Keeping up his New Year's resolution to be more pumped. Before we begin, I will, as always, extend an invitation to our fine fans out there that if you have a topic that you would like us to discuss, you can hit us up on the Film Stage show. And, of course, you can always email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. One of today's topics was actually brought to us by a listener. So that is something that happens. And, as always, iTunes, find us, rate us, comment, let us know how we're doing. It's also a way for other people to find out about the show and how wonderful it is. So that is that's that for the incoming stuff. Gentlemen, first roundtable of the new year, last roundtable before the age of Trump. How are we feeling?
I have no idea what that even means.
What are you talking about?
There's so much that I just had to unpack. My mind is spinning.
You give Bill two things and his mind spins. I mean, you know, we've talked about our New Year's resolutions. Bill, you're going to get more pumped. Mike, you're going to try to quit heroin, if I remember correctly. And
it's tough, guys. I'm just saying.
It's got bad scratch fever. But yeah, it's the first time we've come back to talk about film and film culture in a way that wasn't centered around a specific movie or a top 10 list. So, and we're in
that top 10 felt like a round table though. It did.
I suppose. Yeah. I suppose. That actually kind of makes sense because we're doing another countdown on this episode. So yeah, that's true. The top 10 does feel a little bit like a roundtable. Well, before we actually jump into the episode proper, allow me to remind everyone at home that we are brought to you, as always, by MUBI. MUBI is a curated streaming film service that you can find online, and it is now available through your Roku player. So if you have a Roku stick or a box, or if you're like me and you have a Roku TV, you no longer have to go through the arduous process of getting your mobile device to mirror to that thing. Now you can just install the MUBI channel and be able to surf their very nice app. I will say, like, I watch a lot of streaming services. One of these days we should do like a ranking of streaming service app shittiness. I will say right now that Amazon streaming app,
but a pretty good library, like, surprisingly.
That's the crazy thing. Like, it's such a good service, but it sucks. But here's the thing about MUBI. They're a good service that has, as far as I know on Roku, a very nice app. I like, turned it on, and I was expecting, like, oh, it's new. It's not going to be that great. It's smooth. It's beautiful. It was actually fun just to surf through and see everything that they had. And they do have some great stuff. For those who don't know, MUBI has curators who choose a new film each day to add to their service, and then you have 30 days to watch that film. So you're constantly getting a rotating selection of foreign, independent, and all-around awesome cinema. And we here at the Film Stage love MUBI so much, and they love us so much, that we have driven ourselves together in order to give you, our listeners, a special benefit. You can go to MUBI.com/30-day-trial of MUBI for absolutely nothing. Lord, Jesus fucking Christ. Just Bill, living up to that New Year's resolution, getting us pumped for MUBI. So check it out. Again, that's MUBI.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial of MUBI. All right. Guys, it is the heat of awards season. We just had the Golden Globes. Critic circles, guilds, they're all throwing their awards around. The BAFTAs, their nominations were announced. And we're all
and they really threw the baby out with the BAFTAs.
God damn it. God damn it. It is over. That's it. I'm taking off my headphones. This goddamn show is over. I'm going to give everyone at home a solid 2 seconds to recover from that terrible pun. Okay. Jesus. Let's move on. We here at the Film Stage Show and Film Stage Roundtable have a special announcement. And what better way to put that announcement out to you than under a nice little bed of music? So, everyone knows that these films and all the nominations are building up to the greatest of all possible film award ceremonies. The ones that will be remembered for years. The ones that we will be talking about for years to come. There is nothing on earth more important to you, the listener, to us, to the whole of Hollywood, than the Film Stage Show Awards, also Woo! Known Hype Man Bill Graham.
Bill, where are you at with this?
I'm waiting. Hold on.
Also known as the Stagies. That's right. This year, you can put your Oscar ballots away. You can tell your friends you won't be going to their 4-hour-long Oscar party. Instead, you can tell them that you are sitting at home, furiously refreshing the podcatcher of your choice. Because we have decided, why should we give a shit about the awards that a bunch of strangers give out when we could give out our own awards? Awards in the categories that really matter. Categories like the Is This Safe to Google Award for Moonlight title.
Yes!
Or the Drive It Like You Stole It Award for Best Car Chase. Also included the Eoin Griffard Award for Worst Hero and the Collective Swoon Award for Best Smile. Now, I know what you're thinking. Here it is, another goddamn awards show. And I won't have any skin in the game. Because you didn't make these movies, I assume. But if you did, hit us up with an email and we'll get you on the show. No, you're just going to sit there. You're going to let the fates decide. You're going to say, ugh, who won Best Actor? Who cares? A bunch of strangers chose this. Nope, not here at the Stagies. At the Stagies, we want you to make the big choices. So while we have nominated 3 potential winners for every category, we are going to open up the final ballot to you, the listeners at home. So, I know you're wondering, how on God's green earth do I get my hands on that? Do I do it? Do I punch the ballot? Well, the answer is, find us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, be prepared. You gotta stick with us. Because when this show is released, we will be tweeting out the link for you to go and fill out your 2016 Film Stage Show Awards ballot. So if you want to be able to say to your friend, fuck you, I chose the winner of the Why Are They Talking Like That Award for Worst Accent. I chose the winner of the No Peaceful Rest Award for Best Body Disposal. You can follow us, and you can get that link, and you can do this. Guys, is it possible that we have created
I'm so hyped right now.
The most wonderful, the most populist, the most amazing awards show of all time?
Yes.
Sure.
God damn, I am so excited for this. This is going to be the best. Finally, all the Twitter jokes about animals who should have won Best Actor will actually have a place to go where they can say that animal that I loved so much actually won an award. And that place is right here on this goddamn podcast. It is the Stagies, the inaugural Stagies Award Show, happens this year in 2 goddamn weeks. When we come back to this round table, we will be announcing the winners of the 2016 Stagies. You don't want to not be a part of this, so follow us. Get ready. Get your friends invested. If you see that the person who you loved the most, or the film that you loved the most, was nominated for the Sound and Fury Award for most nonsensical plot, and you want it to get awarded, you gotta get your damn friends in on this. Tell them to vote. And then tell them to listen, so you can all be a part of the majesty. Guys, I'm pumped. And I hope you all are pumped at home. And that's about it. So remember, Twitter, Facebook, we're putting that Stagies ballot link out. We're gonna need you to vote. Let's fade out the Gustav Holst. All right. So that's it. That's the big thing. We sent out a tweet about it last week. We've been agonizing over our choices. The time has finally come. The
I gotta be honest. That music was gonna give me a panic attack if it kept going.
I feel like I was watching a silent movie and someone was about to get murdered.
Yep. Or something would explode.
I'll tell you what's exploding. The Stagies. All up Michael's in the faces heart. Of the haters. Get ready.
Phrasing.
Nope. The Stagies. The Stagies are coming. I hope all of you at home are super excited. If you're listening to this, the ballot is live. So that's it for that announcement. I don't know how we can possibly recover from the joy and the madness inspired by that announcement, but let's try. Our first roundtable discussion topic. Here we go. This was the one that was nominated for us by a listener. This topic is titled Death to Discs. Feel the need to over-enunciate that really hard. When I talked about not being able to find Psych on Netflix a while back, a listener, rogue cop with a personal score to settle, Jacob Sever, asked a rather apropos question. What about discs? And then he sent us a picture of his collection of Blu-rays and DVDs that made my mouth hit the floor. Now, it is true that physical media is flagging, but we wanted to talk about our own relationship with it and how we view its future. So let's kick that off. Bill Graham, I'm curious. Are you a big disc buyer?
Hell no.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right, well, I wanted to ask, like, do you buy downloads, or do you just rent, or do you not even spend money? Do you just stream, like, for free?
Mostly I stream. I honestly, outside of theatrical, I don't consume a whole lot of movies, unless it's sent to me in like a screener format, things like that. You know, towards the year end, we all kind of, anybody that has kind of award season ballots and stuff like that, they all do the kind of award season crunch where the last 2 months of the year is just like, just, you know, 30 movies a day kind of shit. Or at least, you know, that's the plan, right? But, you know, I honestly don't buy a lot of movies. I think for the most part, when I buy a movie, I have two main criteria. A, I have to absolutely adore the film. But my second criteria usually is the hardest one to hurdle, and that is, have a ton of people seen it? And if not, would I want to watch that again with someone? Would I basically be like, hey, I have this movie you haven't seen before, we should watch this immediately? If that's not part of my pool, it's got to be something just a classic easy rewatch that I'm gonna purchase. Otherwise, for the most part, I tried to just not purchase that many movies because I'm not gonna sit down and rewatch a lot of movies. There's very few movies that I really want to watch again and again. I have The Matrix, I have The Big Lebowski, I have Jaws, I have a few of my seminal favorites, but beyond that, I just try to avoid purchasing all that much media, specifically because I try to limit the amount of discs that I have, because especially since I've started doing like award season ballots and stuff like that, I get mailed a ton of screeners towards the end of the year, and usually that kind of fills in the gap. I mean, whatever. So that fills in a gap where I just don't want to overcrowd myself with a bunch of media that it turns into your own little Netflix. It turns into this, oh my God, I have so many options. What do I watch? I don't want to watch any of this stuff. And so that's kind of my viewpoint on most physical media, is I just am not going to sit down and rewatch something from beginning to end for the most part. I can't work with something else in the background. Some people like to play movies while they do work, but my work is usually something very intensive, and like either it's creative or it's highly technical, and I can't have a movie going on in the background while I do that. So that's my viewpoint on physical media. Death to physical media.
Good luck. All right. Michael Snydell, how are you? What are your habits in terms of movie buying? Are you a disc guy? Do you buy digital? Do you just rent? Do you only stream free?
I mean, it kind of depends on a case by case basis. But to answer that question, I guess like I've bought very few discs in the last, you know, year. For instance, the last thing I bought was a Johnny Toe movie that I found at a used bookstore. And the only reason I bought it is because I knew that there was an English dub on Amazon for free, but it was an English dub and I didn't want to watch that. So that was like a very special circumstance where I knew I wanted to see that movie, but it wasn't really available in what was the ideal situation. And I guess my overall experience with buying discs is for most of my life, I probably didn't buy enough discs. I guess it's not really that scandalous to say anymore, but like I torrented a fuck ton of movies when I was younger. Like, it just was a thing that I did when torrenting was really easy, and when there at least didn't appear to be the risk that there is now. I guess the thing about discs is, for a long time, I did it because I bought things because they weren't available, or I knew that they'd be better quality. And for a while, collecting Criterions was something that was really fun. Although I have to admit, it's very annoying when you start collecting Criterion DVDs and then you realize, oh wait, there's Criterion Blu-rays that have like not only more supplemental material, but look way, way better. So
oh, yeah,
it's like a very self-defeating thing to get discs. But at the same time, I do have to admit there is something. There is a weird joy and excitement to have a shelf or shelves full of discs, even as it is just kind of taking up space. Like, I don't necessarily just want everything available to me on, you know, Netflix or Amazon or HBO or whatever, because the fact of the matter is that I don't do a good job of cataloging what's available and what's not, and everything just starts piling up. And but with that said, I also have like 10 to 12 DVDs and Blu-rays that I haven't watched yet, like that are like movies that I've said I'm going to watch for years. Like I have like fucking Nashville. I haven't fucking watched. God, what's that Lars von Trier one with Bjork? Dancer in the Dark. I have like a bunch of them that I've wanted to watch for years and years, and they're just on my shelf, but it seems nearly impossible. A friend just gave me a movie, and I was like, oh yeah, I need this movie right now. And I guess my experience with discs is it's a very awkward relationship in the year 2017, because I want them, but I also don't use them, and they also infuriate me because I'm like, oh wait, this is available somewhere else in a better quality, or you know, not letterboxed, or you know, it's there's always something else, and it's maddening.
Well, for me, the reason I was so set on watching Psych on streaming is that I'm just not going to buy Psych. It's not good enough.
Sure.
I don't like, and I honestly, I want to put it on, lay on the couch, and forget
and
about my terrible life for a bit. So that's why I was like uber into it on that. So it'll be weird to say now, after having made such a big deal about trying to stream Psych, which my wife literally yelled at me at a party we threw last Sunday, for God's sake, stop talking about Psych not being on Netflix anymore. I love buying discs. Like, I have to buy the discs. I gotta buy the Blu-rays of everything that I love, because you never know when it's not going to be there. You never know when your internet's going to go out. You never know they're going to lose the rights to it. I think about something that my dad used to say. Well, it's not like it was a saying of his, but he told me when MP3s were becoming a thing, you know, he said, you're going to want to burn those to a disc because the computer could crash. And then when iTunes started up, he said, you know, when I was a kid and I bought a record, I owned that record. I could put that record on whenever I wanted. I could play that record on any record player.
Mm-hmm.
When you get a digital copy, you're not even getting a copy. You're getting the license to be able to play that digital thing on a specific digital player.
Mm.
There was an ebook edition of 1984 that was removed from people's Kindles without their...
I remember that.
Without their realization, because it turns out that the publisher didn't have the rights. And that was a hilariously poetic
1984-ism.
Yeah, exactly. So I always have this thing where I'm like, the rules will change. Something will happen, and I won't be able to watch this thing in the way in which I am used to it. And the day that I'm going to want it is the day that that is going to happen.
See, so, but my issue with that, though, is like what Michael is saying. And hopefully everything continues to be backwards compatible. But
sure.
let me posit something to you right now. If you follow Alamo and the Alamo Drafthouse, and some of the things they do is like they're huge supporters of VHS. And what they actually do is here and there, they actually do video, or I think it's Video Vortex, but they also do like just a selection of films that are only available currently on VHS, that never made the jump from VHS to DVD because there wasn't enough market for that film for that process to be undertaken. So hopefully DVD and Blu-ray aren't on the cutting room floor here soon, but let's imagine that in 10, 15 years, we've gone to pretty much smaller mediums of technology and things like that. No longer are discs a thing. You buy it and it comes on like a drive and that's it. Like all the special features, everything is all right there. It doesn't, you don't have to worry about ever scratching it. You don't ever have to worry about it doing any of that funky stuff, except you know, every now and then, once in a blue moon, it just disappears. that'll be entertaining. But so the backwards compatibility or compatibility issue is something that definitely has to be on a lot of people's minds, because there's a lot of movies that people cherish on VHS that are not available on DVD or Blu-ray. And they're like,
you just gotta have the right player. You just gotta get a VHS player. Like that's
so you're just gonna carry one around with you for the rest of your life.
I carry around a record player.
That's become back in vogue.
But that's
a VHS
the thing.
Has not
that,
come back in vogue.
Well, you just said that the Alamo Drafthouse is like making a thing about VHS. That's how it begins. Like you get rid of something for convenience. And then people start to say, you know what, this convenience is great, but there was something tactile and beautiful about that. You know, people get nostalgic for the weight of a record and like the weird
or the fact that you have to get up in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yep. There's like there's a ritual to putting a record on. You lift the needle off of the old one, you pick up the old one, you carefully put it back in its sleeve, then you file through and you're forced to like touch and take account of all of these things that you purchased, and like maybe you touch it and you remember in a weird way where you were when you got it. Like the first DVD I ever bought was Enemy at the Gates. I didn't even have a DVD player. I had to watch it on my PC at home, and you know, but I wanted that movie and it was on a DVD, and I saw that it had all these extras on it, and I was like, oh my god, that's so cool. And I still have that DVD and I can still watch it on my Blu-ray player. And I just think that there's something about that, that even if it stops becoming the main thing, that certain places, and like Criterion is already set up for this basically, are going to keep that kind of boutique reality of physical ownership alive. And I'm going to continue to patronize. I'm going to continue to buy from those people because I like having that wall of discs. I like pointing at them and being like, yeah, it's all my movies. And people can be like, holy shit. That is something that you care about, and you have created a shrine to that thing that you care about.
I talk about movies in my day-to-day life enough to where people are already like, oh, shut up. I know you like movies. I will say one thing that y'all brought up that I didn't quite think about, because I didn't put a lot of effort into thinking about this. Because,
well, as a person who doesn't get discs, why would you?
Well, here's the caveat, and here's the catch. I fucking love special features. Like, you give me a good behind the scenes documentary and I will eat that shit up. I have rewatched behind the scenes documentaries before. Like the special edition, I think it was the 30th edition of Jaws that came out. That Blu-ray, that film, the restoration they did on that film, it makes it look so crisp and clean that it looks like it was shot yesterday. It looks incredible on Blu-ray. But they have like over an hour and a half of just documentary stuff, behind the scenes stuff that is just fascinating to watch. And like, you know, I've mentioned before that my rewatch a lot of times is actually through podcasts. I listen to other people talk about films and things like that. And within, you know, a month of seeing a film, in a way, I've consumed it two or three or four more times. So I've already seen something four times usually by the time it leaves theaters, even if I've only physically sat down and watched it once. But a documentary is kind of another way of just going at it from a different angle. It's you know, a long form version of that. And I will rewatch those for sure before I ever even rewatch, you know, a scene from a film or things like that. I'll, you know, I've watched the behind the scenes stuff for Jurassic Park oh man, I can't tell you how many times. Like I just yeah, no, love, I love, and that's the sad thing is nowadays, because so many films are just CGI madness, there isn't a whole lot to look at behind the scenes. It's like, here's this guy.
We gave it to the VFX people and they put the thing in.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, here he goes. He's running down the street that is completely green. Oh my God, this is not exciting to look at. You know, I remember,
back in the day, I think on Discovery Channel, they used to have the show Movie Magic. I think I maybe brought this show up on this podcast before. But, you know, they talked about how for the Terminator 2, T2, they had the part where the liquid metal reconstitutes itself. And they talked about how, like, they basically just had, like, actual melted metal, and then they had it on a shifting floor so they could make the beads move how they needed them to. And like you said, that is today the type of thing where you just get someone to copy-paste from an episode of The Secret Life of Alex Mack. Which is just weird.
Port that effect right over. Yeah. Good reference. Good call out, Brian.
I have no idea
what that. I've heard that show. I've never watched a single episode, but
Larissa Olenek, look it up.
Okay.
Well, guys, can I bring up one other thing? Is that like I do have to say, as much as I'm talking about just wanting to burn all my discs and never buy anything ever again, and you know, just end America's capitalistic system. I do find Michael Snydell.
Why don't you light up a joint and tell us how Bernie could have won.
Bernie?
Yeah, Bernie Sanders.
No, I know, but you said joint and then you said Bernie, and I just, all right, never mind.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
Anyways, yeah. I do have to admit that as I get older, I do want to start taking a more scholarly look at things that I like. Yet, you know, whether that is, as you're saying, Bill, watching those in-depth special features and things like that, because I find when I do that, I do get more out of the experience. Yeah. And I do, you know, listen to people talk about a movie, but there is something to be said for putting in that time. My problem is that maybe it's just because I'm young and I'm terrified of my mortality, but my FOMO just overwhelms everything.
As though to prove how young you are, you said FOMO.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I'd like to say is that there's another thing. Like, on streaming services, it just feels like fast food consumption of like art.
Yeah.
Like, even if I watch something important and beautiful, the second it's over and the credits start rolling, Netflix fucking shrinks it down and is like, hey, you enjoyed that, why don't you watch a series of unfortunate events? And I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, give me a minute with this.
Here's the weird thing about Netflix, and even Amazon, I think, does this as well. But so they will fast food, they will allow you to guzzle it, right? But then after 3 hours, they'll be like, are you still there? Are you still watching this? And it's like, hey man, like don't be asking me that question. All right. I haven't said no. Especially if it's a shorter show.
Because like if I'm like sick in bed or like just lazy and hungover or just lazy,
sure,
I'll stop trying to give myself excuses. Sometimes I just want to sit down and watch like an hour and a half of 30 Rock. But like those episodes are 22 minutes long. So after only an hour, it's like, God, are you still doing this? I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Netflix, calm the fuck
off.
Hulu doesn't judge me. Hulu, I could die, and it would cycle through an entire season of Lost without a bat in an eye. To wrap us up and to prove how sick I am.
Hold on. Okay. One quick note. I will say this. I have bought a couple of DVDs. I have bought a couple of seasons of TV shows, Mad Men specifically, because I just fucking wanted to support the show and I wanted to support the creators. I really do wish some of these movie filmmakers would just go ahead and create a PayPal link or something where I can just send them some money out of the studio system. I don't even care. Like, okay, yeah, I'm done watching your film. let me just send you $10. Like, I
asked,
just want your brain $10.
Yeah, I asked Shane Carruth if he would think about doing that, because I was like, man, I'd give you like $10 a month if I thought it would help you get another movie made, when I was interviewing him about Upstream Color. And he was I don't want to do that, because like, I want to make a thing. I don't want like people to just pay me to exist. Like, he's like, I want people to get a thing when they give me money. And I'm like, well,
okay. Well, then how about you give me the option of adding a tip to your Upstream Color Blu-ray, and then I'll buy your Blu-ray of Upstream Color, and I will tip you $150. Like,
yeah,
just do that.
I told him, just like, do a pre-sale. Like, make a set of producer or something. But anyway, it's his choice. So my final anecdote, during the last Criterion
sale, that is Kickstarter a bit, Brian. I'm just saying, like, you described it as Kickstarter.
Yeah, and I was telling him to do that. I was like, you should go on Kickstarter. And he's like, but you know, sure. Basically what he wanted to do was, like, he didn't want to take money and then not have it work. He only wanted to, because then he would feel like shit, and who could blame him? So my final thing, during the last Criterion sale, I bought the Blu-ray edition of The New World by Terrence Malick, which has the theatrical
on brand.
What was that?
On brand.
That is on brand for me. super on brand, actually. It's about to get even more on brand. So that version, the Blu-ray from Criterion, has three different cuts of the movie. It's got the theatrical cut, the extended cut. Both of those had previously been released on DVD and Blu-ray, and it had the extended cut that he'd first shown but didn't get released in theaters and was not the extended cut on the DVD. So I get this, and I come home, I rip it open. My wife is like, I've never seen you so happy. And I was like, I'm so excited. I have the other two versions, but now I have the other version that I haven't seen. And she says, wait a second. So with this, how many copies of The New World do you technically own? And I said, well, 5. I have the original DVD. Jeez. That was the wide release theatrical version. I have the extended cut
so
DVD.
you have more copies than versions exist.
Yes, because the final one I got was the previous two that I had plus a third that I didn't. So if anyone needs a copy of The New World, you can't have them. I'm keeping them. I literally told my wife that. I was like, no, I need to keep them all. And she's like, why? And I said, because they're mine. So that's
wow. That.
Let's move on.
The Rod look into Brian's with you. You're just gonna be like, no. I don't want any money for this. You can't have it.
Yeah,
and
no.
Your wife's just gonna be like, are you serious? We're moving. We're downsizing. You're like, no, this is mine.
Actually,
this is always mine.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem. We're running out of space. Luckily, I finally went into my attic the other day and realized that my attic is basically like an entire third floor that's just not finished. So I'm just going to turn that into a third floor, and then we'll never have to leave, and I can keep buying more Blu-rays.
So, this is exactly why. This is exactly why I don't buy movies. This is
because
exactly
then
why.
You'll have to buy a house and create a whole third floor to use them in.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well,
I have enough shit.
That's who I am. So let's move on. Let's go to our most anticipated movies of 2017. This is a segment that is in conjunction with a feature that we did on the film stage. Before we jump into it, let's listen to a song. Every year, even though
Carly and Madonna, I like your choices this episode, Brent.
So 2016 is as dead as insert tasteless reference to a celebrity who died in 2016 here. Now it's time to look ahead. So without further needed explanation, here are our top three most anticipated films of 2017. Let's start with Michael Snydell. Michael, why don't you hit us with your number three most anticipated film of 2017?
All right. My third most anticipated is it's called The Beguiled, and it is the next film from director Sofia Coppola. So she last did – her last two projects have been interesting.
So you like white people?
Sure.
Rich like white people?
So anyways, Bill, as I was saying, so her last two projects have been pretty interesting, and I dare say I didn't particularly like them. Bill Murray Christmas was – I think I made it about 20 minutes in and then just kind of fast-forwarded to try to find – random shit that seemed interesting, but it was not good. And then The Bling Ring, I felt like the pacing had hit some major hitches throughout, and I just found the thing kind of slight, despite the fact that I find some of the compositions and some of the unspoken commentary interesting, besides for the overall stranger than fiction quality of the true story. But The Beguiled is it's extra weird in the sense that it is actually a remake of a 1971 film from Don Siegel, who's probably best known for the Clint Eastwood films Dirty Harry and Escape from Alcatraz. And so the logline for this is very strange, too. It's about a Confederate soldier who is taken into he's injured and taken into a Confederate girls boarding school. I'm sorry. It's a Confederate boarding school, and it's an injured Union soldier. And in the original, the Union soldier was played by Clint Eastwood. And the cast of the original is pretty interesting, has a lot of interesting 70s actresses like Geraldine Page and Elizabeth Hartman. But the remake has a pretty interesting cast. It for the three young women, it's Elle Fanning, Nicole Kidman, and Kirsten Dunst. And I've tried not to read about what happens in the original or the novel that it was based on, but it's kind of a southern gothic novel, and I guess it gets kind of psychosexual, and there's some very strange dynamics in terms of how the women react being three women and around one man. And Coppola, I think, has worked really well in this space, in things like Virgin Suicides. Virgin Suicides is specifically the one I was thinking of. But in terms of like repressed sexuality and being able to make that very compelling while also not forgetting that these are all people at the center. So, my third most anticipated is Sofia Coppola's The Beguiled, which comes out in June. So it's not that far away.
All right. My number three most anticipated is Happy End. This is a new film by writer-director Michael Haneke. And, does it matter what it's about? Like it's Michael Haneke. Like it's going to be great. He like the Dardenne brothers and Terrence Malick cannot make a movie that I don't like in some way. I find their work to be so personally driven, but artistically solid that I never have a problem with them. And I don't
Do you like being punished?
Yeah, a lot. I fucking love it. It's the best. I like flagellate myself mentally nearly constantly. I can't get more than two glasses of whiskey in me before I start talking about how I forced my friend to kill himself. So yeah, like I love punishment. It's the best. And so Michael Haneke is just like perfect for that. And like I went to IMDb just to like look at the plot summary, and it's just a drama about a family set in Calais with the European refugee crisis as the backdrop. It's perfect. It's great. I'm down for this, man. The last time he had something that sounded a little bit like this was Cachet, because it dealt with how the French treated the Algerians. And that was a brilliant masterpiece. That was the first Haneke I ever saw. It's weird because I think my favorite by him is still Time of the Wolf, which is nuts, because even people who love Haneke have a problem with that film. Mainly because it, I'm not going to say how it ends, but it's not a happy film. This also, you can look at the cast. It's Isabel Huppert, Matthew Kosovitz, and Jean-Louis Trintignant. And, like, those people are great. They're fantastic. So, Happy End by Michael Haneke. What more needs to be said? Bill Graham, what's your number three?
My number three is The Glass Castle by Destin Daniel Cretton. This is a film, he hasn't made another one since his initial kind of breakout film Short Term 12 with Brie Larson, which still to my mind is that year's one of the best films of that year, probably one of the best films that I've seen kind of tackle depression and the people that work around depression. The film is just absolutely gorgeous. It is beautiful from start to finish. And he's making another film with Brie Larson. So it also has Naomi Watts and Woody Harrelson. And I'm just ecstatic that this guy is continuing to make another film. It's been a long time since he's come out with something. I think Short Term 12 actually came out in 2012 or 2013, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been a while.
On IMDb.
Yeah, so it's been a while. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing what he does. This film, and you're going to kind of see a running theme with my films that I picked. Unfortunately, I realized that after the fact, but that's fine. They're all adaptations of existing work. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of comes of this. I wish he was playing in the original kind of format, because I don't like knowing too much about a film before I see it. And when you adapt something, there's a lot of spoilers that are just floating around out there. So, yeah.
My mom loved this book, actually.
Yeah.
I just realized, Bill, now that you said that I think all of mine are non-adaptation, non-remake. They're all original.
Well, congratulations.
Nice. Yeah. Another fucking on-brand moment for Brian J. Rowan, bitch. Michael Snydell, let's talk about your number two.
My number two is Bong Joon-ho's Okja, which, Bong Joon-ho is a director who I've liked for a long time. You know, Memories of Murder, The Host. Why can't I think of other Bong Joon-ho movies? Oh, and his most recent is Snowpiercer, some people have very strong feelings about.
A beautiful film until the end.
Bill, get off this podcast. You're not invited back.
I'm just saying.
I will say, Snowpiercer was probably my least favorite by him, with Mother probably being my favorite by him. But
I'm thinking of a different thing.
That's one I haven't actually gotten to. I love the Host? No. What is that film called?
Memories of a Murder?
The Host is the River Monster one.
Yes.
That one's great. Yeah. Oh man, yeah. That one's awesome.
Yeah. So Okja is kind of interesting, because it almost seems like The Host reframed as something more comedic and even more of a social commentary than The Host was, which seems very strange considering that whole film was a commentary on eco horror and what we can do to animals and, all kinds of things on those lines. But it's also a film that I think it was former film stage cast member Amanda Waltz who was talking about how she was watching The Host
this
recently.
This is the film stage show, not the film stage cast.
Sorry, the film stage show former member
Amanda
Waltz.
We're not one
Amanda
of those cast shows, all right? We don't just slap Jesus. A cast onto the end.
All right. Anyways, Amanda Waltz was talking on Twitter about how it hasn't aged particularly well, and I was kind of at that point, I went to look at a bunch of YouTube clips to remind myself. And it does have to be said, you know, with the knowledge of what digital CGI can look like now, the host is a bit rough. So I do have to admit as well that I'm pretty excited to see Bong Joon-ho, you know, get his hands on some blockbuster money. And in this case, weirdly, Netflix, who's putting this out. And then finally, the cast in here is what makes me ecstatic. So it's a Korean and American cast. And so you have, you know, people like Woo Sik Choi, who was in The Host, and I think has been in every Bong Joon-ho film. But then you also have people like Tilda Swinton, Giancarlo Esposito, Paul Dano, Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, there's a very strange cast, and it's hard to explain it, but I would absolutely recommend people look at the cast pictures that came out, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, because Tilda Swinton and Jake Gyllenhaal are in some fantastic outfits, and I want to know everything that's going on. So, that's Okja.
Sweet. My number two will actually be showing at Sundance, so I'm getting right on the edge of the wave for this.
Yes.
Is a film, a ghost story, called A Ghost Story. This Ooh. Is by writer-director David Lowery. This is the film that he made with Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara that he kind of slipped under the radar and then announced that there would be a movie coming out with them, and now we know that it is called A Ghost Story. And, again, from IMDb, this is the story of a ghost and the house he haunts. I know that I read a plot synopsis that was about this. I kind of put it out of my mind, though, because as with most of these movies that I'm anticipating, it's the talent that sends it to me, and I don't need to know more about that. It took me a long time to wean myself away from the kind of culture that we have in film sometimes, where, like, 2 months before it comes out, we want to know what the third stinger on the newest Marvel film is. So just knowing that we've got David Lowery, who did the beautiful, wonderful Pete's Dragon, and the beautiful...
on Bill's top 10.
Beautiful, and yeah. It was in my top 15, I think. And the beautiful, wonderful Ain't Them Body Saints, which was on my top 10 the year that that came out. I can only imagine that A Ghost Story will be, you guessed it, beautiful and wonderful. Casey Affleck, he was great in Manchester by the Sea. Literally ripped my heart out, showed it to me, took a bite out of it, and then threw it into a bramble bush. And Rooney Mara is great in just about everything that she's in. So I always look for a reason to see her in something, and she is often a reason that I do see things. So with the both of them in this, reuniting after Ain't Them Body Saints, which now I think I might watch on Blu-ray after this is over, that is A Ghost Story, and I am very much looking forward to hearing out of Sundance how it goes. Go, Graham.
It's so cool to have watched so many films to where I can see when Rooney Mara really kind of broke out on the scene in The Social Networks, which you haven't seen still, Brian.
No, I have not.
She broke out in that, and then I think the next real big thing that she landed was actually Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and everybody was like, what? Who's this one? And it was just like, oh, you need to watch this, because apparently people still haven't seen The Social Network.
Anyway, Bill Graham, what's your number two most anticipated film of 2017?
Alright, guys. So, this is Annihilation by Alex Garland. This has to be one of my favorite working directors going right now. I can listen to this guy talk in interviews for ages because he is unfiltered. He reminds me so much of Guillermo del Toro when he talks about things, because he's very frank and he's very upfront. And he's honest to a point where I'm sure some publicists would just rather him not be. And I love listening to this guy because he just knows what he's trying to achieve with his films and his works. He's been very outspoken about the fact that, you know, most of the time his scripts have ended up being tweaked and twisted and turned into things that they weren't quite supposed to be by the final product. And so he finally took over directorial duties for Ex Machina, one of my absolute favorite films of the last few years. And he's back again with Annihilation with Natalie Portman, one of my favorite actresses, in the lead. It was apparently a well-received science fiction novel that I have not heard of.
It apparently was like in sci-fi circles. It was pretty ballied about as something great. I read it. I'm excited to see what he does with it.
Yeah. So again, he adapted Dread, and whether he ended up ultimately directing that film or not, that's still kind of, you know, that's going to be long rumored in Hollywood history for a very long time, I'm sure.
That was a question.
Oh yeah. It's definitely a question. That's definitely one of my favorite adaptations because it was so honest to the character. It was so honest to the source material, and it just showed a flair for taking things and adapting them and having fun with them. And that film was just from beginning to end was just jam packed with so much fun and sense of humor that I really think, even if you take something that isn't exactly super adaptable and something that will translate or maybe just isn't as good of a work as maybe you would think he would try to take on, I think that gives him the ability to just improve upon it. So I'm very curious to see what he does with it. I haven't read too much about it. I don't want to know too much more. I know it's got Portman. I know it's got Garland. I'm in.
All right. I, too, am looking forward to that, though having read the book, it's more curiosity now than anything else. Michael Snydell, what's your number one?
You know, by that same token, my number one is something that it has the possibility to really, really fail. And that is the remake of Suspiria. And so this is something
you brought this up, and I didn't say nothing. But now that we're here on the podcast,
well, can I talk about who's involved first?
No, and then you may not. We can... This is a terrible idea, and you, sir, are a bad person for supporting it in any fashion. Now you may speak.
So yeah, no. When I first heard about Suspiria, the Suspiria remake, I was initially like, what the fuck is this shit? That was my initial reaction. And that's not even having a diehard affection for the first one. Although it is absolutely one of those movies that, you know, I saw at like 2 a.m. in the morning for the first time in high school. And it was one of those movies that felt like way too real at that moment. Like when I closed my computer, like I kind of thought I would look up and there'd be witches in my room. But, you know... So then I was looking it up, and I saw that it was on our top 100 most anticipated on the film stage. And it's actually directed by Luca Guadagnino, who's an Italian director who actually did I Am Love and last year's A Bigger Splash. And this is not the usual director, I would imagine, for this. I would think they would get someone, you know, more in line with like an Adam Wingard or you know, someone else who has worked in something more, I don't want to say generically horror because that sounds backhanded to Adam Wingard, but something that is more genre-based. And Guadagnino's past films are not really genre based. They are very tonally varied. They're very tonally twisty. You know, they move from, you know, lurid erotic, you know, erotic romances to light comedies to just kind of these operatic peaks. And, you know, the more I think about this, you know, A Bigger Splash was one of my favorite films last year. And I didn't get to talk a lot about it because it was in my top 20 or whatever. But, you know, I think he's – if there's someone who's going to do this, I think potentially he's the guy who could bring his own spin to this without tainting the original thing. And I – the cast and the cinematographers are really interesting here. The cinematographer they got is actually a the same cinematographer who has done a lot of Joe's work, like Uncle Boon Me and Syndromes in a Century. And so it's this very like atmospheric, naturalistic, like existentialist thing, you know, existentialist bent of where you see something and it looks normal until you, you know, do a double take and realize that there's a ghost in the frame. And you know, they got a really interesting trio for, you know, kind of the main girls. Dakota Johnson plays the main character, and then you have Tilda Swinton as Madame Blanc. You have Mia Goth from Nymphomaniac as Sarah. You have Chloe Grace Moretz as Patricia. And, you know, I do think there is going to be something lost in the dubbing. And there is a certain quality to Giallo that I don't really know if they want to replicate, because it has the possibility of, you know, ending on the wrong side of something like Grindhouse or something. And I like Grindhouse, but I'm just saying that it's very easy to make that aesthetic feel flimsy or make it feel like a gimmick more than a narrative. So, you know what? I'm going to take a chance and say this could be something really interesting, despite the fact that it could also be terrible.
I just think that Suspiria, you know what? I'm going to do this for as I'm talking. I can't envision this freaking movie going well, like at all. I just like, it's,
but the question is, what if it does? What is going on right now?
I'm putting
Goblin.
Yeah.
Goblin.
Bill's or Michael's got it.
Well, what do you make of Luca?
I don't like him. I don't really like him that much. I don't understand it. I don't understand the. I'm putting on a different song. Because honestly,
it was
the wrong song. Here we go. This is the one I wanted.
There we go.
This will help to underscore. Suspiria is a movie that is so much distillation of everything in it. It is it's not really a good story. It's the production design. It's this music. Sure. It's those people speaking in that way with those colors, and it's Dario Argento's
nonsense.
Wildly uneven genius that to even try to remake it is to like fundamentally misunderstand it. And I just feel like you can throw in all the interesting talent you want. I think that him, the director, choosing Tilda Swinton to be Madame Blanc is just like the most frighteningly uninspired choice. And it's just exactly the type of thing that like a stoned college kid who just saw Suspiria would say, oh, you know what? They remade that. Like Tilda Swinton, bro. Like, it's just, there's nothing particularly interesting in what they've said they're going to do. And I just don't see it working out. So, yeah, I have
and
to.
And I fundamentally disagree with that statement.
That's funny, because I was just about to say I fundamentally disagree with you. So two fundamentalists hanging out, shouting at each other. I can't wait to.
I don't give a shit.
Well, we'll have to. Maybe. Well, I was going to say we'll have to find someone else to be on the podcast then. But I think your impartiality may be what we need when we talk about it. So I'm going to figure this out.
I'm really glad that David Gordon Green didn't go through with his original remake. I would much prefer this one to David Gordon Green doing this.
I will give you that. I will allow that to stand. Anyway, for me, my most anticipated. Does anyone let's just do this. Who wants to tell me what my most anticipated movie of 2017 is?
It's PTA or Terrence
Malick.
All right. Well, Bill locked in his one. Mike, you got to give me a certainty.
Fine. I'll go with PTA.
Oh, you're wrong. Bill was right. It's Malick. It's Song
cool.
Song. I'm not that much of a PTA.
You get a movie that I don't give a fuck about.
Yeah, well, we'll see how great fucking Suspiria turns out to be.
All right, we will.
So this movie is Terrence Malick. All right, that's it. So it's like, what else do I need to say? You know me, you know who I am. Song to Song is coming out, and it's going to be probably my number one of the year. Bill Graham, let's... It's Terrence Malick. He runs the fucking floor, man. Only to the wonder, since I've begun doing lists and Terrence Malick has been putting out movies again, To the Wonder is the only one that hasn't taken the number one spot. It's just the way it is. It's just, I know that I'm going to love it. And if I don't, you know, I'll be the first to admit it, and it's going to hurt me a lot. Like, it'll be like if my wife came home and tried to murder me in my sleep. It'll just be a thing that I never could see happening to me. So, Bill Graham, what is your number one most anticipated film of the year?
This one's been my number one film for a while now. This is Star Wars Episode 8 with Rian Johnson at the helm.
Almost had this on my list, Bill, purely because of Rian Johnson, purely because I'm viewing it as a Rian Johnson film.
Yeah. This, to me, was one of the weirdest things that's ever happened kind of in blockbuster cinema. We really haven't seen any situation like this where a film has a next installment that already has a director announced while the first film in the initial installment is currently still being made. This announcement, when he first was announced as director of Episode 8, it took the winds out of the sails for me for anything that J.J. Abrams could possibly do with Episode 7. Immediately, I was just like, oh, well, okay. Now my sights are firmly set on Episode 8. I don't even care what J.J. Abrams does with Episode 7.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I responded as well.
Yeah, I think there was a unanimous kind of like, oh, why would you do that? Why would you announce this so soon? I think part of it was just simply because of the fact that Rian Johnson just couldn't hang out and just not be making something without people pestering him forever and being like, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing anything? You haven't announced anything. And, you know, they just wanted to be open and just honest and just have him more than likely very involved in the process of Episode 7 and then 8 and then hopefully Episode 9 as much as possible. But look, I am a huge Star Wars fan. I can't stress that enough. Unfortunately, I have not been on the podcast to make that as clear, but this film, for me, really, really is the one that is going to make or break what they do in the future. If this is not as good as I hope it is, this is the one Star Wars film where I'm really, really building my hope and anticipation. I know when that first trailer drops, I'm going to go bonkers. There's just something pure about like my joy and excitement for this film that's hard to kind of put into words. But I really am a big Rian Johnson fan. The Brothers Bloom remains one of my favorite films. Really, really enjoyed Looper, and especially since that was original creation sci-fi, it did something fun and exciting with the time travel genre that usually is not. It was ballsy, and it was weird, and it was different, and it was rated R, and it just had like this hard edge to it throughout. And for some reason they decided to cast Emily Blunt and like make her not look very attractive, which is, you know, a feat all unto itself. That film really, really kind of cemented him as kind of a new original creator, and him getting the helm, of a Star Wars film, to me, is just the epitome of everything that Disney buying the Lucasfilm franchise or name could ultimately end up being. When they announced, you know, J.J. Abrams was in an incredible softball kind of casting as far as directors are concerned. Rian Johnson was an extreme left field casting as far as directing is concerned, and to have him also writing as well, I'm just so curious to see what he does.
It is the unfortunate they're following him up with Ryan, or not Ryan, Colin Trevorrow, though.
Yeah. Yep.
Which
that's why I we'll am see. Why my he's, opinion's very muted.
Here's my thing, Bill. Like I said, I almost had this on my top three most anticipated because I am a Rian Johnson fanboy from the beginning. I went and saw Brick in theaters, which is crazy. But I saw it, and I like found the one theater in DC that was playing it. I took three friends, and it was great. And then I waited and waited, and Brothers Bloom came out, and that was awesome, and I loved it, and I was so sad. I saw him, actually, when he presented that at the same theater that I'd seen Brick. And then I had to wait and wait and wait for Looper, and Looper was fantastic. And like, I just don't know that Disney and the Star Wars apparatus is going to let him be him, you know?
Yep.
Like, he does this thing in most of his movies, like, sound is very important. There's always, like, one scene where, like, an outside observer, be it the camera or a character, will track the progress of someone through a house based on sound while a very large thing happens completely off screen. I don't know if Star Wars is going to let him get away with that. I just don't know. And I want him to, because I know that he wrote the script and I know that he wrote the outline for episode 9. But I'm just, like, super nervous. So, like, his Rian Johnson-ness got muted by the overarching monolith that is Disney, Lucasfilm, Star Wars for me. And I like Jurassic World, but I just still don't... I don't find Colin Trevorrow to be an inspired choice to do something. I think he'll do solid work.
I don't even think that.
Well, I think... Okay. I hate to go down talking about Trevorrow too much, but I think given a good script, he is a capable, more than capable filmmaker. I think he backed himself into a corner with a terrible script that he helped co-write with Jurassic World, and that just was the end of it. A lot of filmmakers have long said that you can't make a great film out of a terrible script. It's very, very difficult, right? And I think that script had a ton of issues, and it shows in the film itself. If you haven't seen Safety Not Guaranteed, that is quite delightful of a film, which he did not write. That's kind of my take on it, is give Rian Johnson the ability to write the screenplay for him, and I'm really thinking that we'll see what comes of that. But my biggest fear right now, yes, I understand what you're saying about Star Wars. I think they don't hire a left field guy like this if they don't relinquish some amount of control, especially after the first film made buku bucks. The new Rogue One.
Yeah, but Bill,
The Josh Trank situation.
This is not Josh Trank at all. This is what I would say is, you know, they hired Edgar Wright to do Ant-Man, and he fucking left. I mean,
this is not them though. That was Marvel.
Yeah,
this
but it's
is
Disney. It's owned by Disney.
I understand that, monolithic, but this is also a Kathleen Kennedy, who is a very smart producer, right?
She made Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Okay, but she also made Twister. She made a ton of other really high-quality, like, entertaining films.
It's true. I'm just saying, there's enough to make me nervous that I couldn't, in good conscience, put this on my thing. But I get where you're going from. I understand, and I want... Bill... Never in my life have I more wanted to have your heart and your optimism than in this moment right now. Because I want the next Rian Johnson film to be a Rian Johnson film that I can love. And I want it to, but you know me, I'm a cynical bastard and I just can't.
Yeah.
I can't let myself believe, man. I won't be hurt again. that is it from us. Let us now listen to what our fans had to say. This is listener feedback time. And you know what that means. Everybody get ready. All right. CEC said The Lost City of Z. Manifesto and Alien Covenant Myth Addict said Annihilation. Alex Garland's second feature film. It sounds cerebral and from the blurb seems like an homage to Stalker. Armando Iannucci's The Death of Stalin. Never has the world needed Iannucci's Biting Satire more than now. And wow, I lost my voice. And then Brady Corbet's Vox Lux. Might come out in 2017, but realistic 2018. Corbet is an exciting, talented young director. Jordan Raup, our benevolent Lord Master, said Lost City of Z, whatever PTA is coming out with. And Song to Song, honorable mentions, Wonderstruck, Beguiled, The Snowman, and You Were Never Really Here. Paul Sorrell said Song to Song, Dunkirk, and the untitled PTA movie. John Stemple said Dunkirk, Dunkirk, oh, and I guess Dunkirk, because we all know that PTA film isn't coming out in 2017, throwing down the goddamn gauntlet. Julian says Malik, Denis, and Alfredson. Brett the Weiss, BS. You Monsters, Making Us Choose Only Three. Darren Aronofsky's Mother. Ben Wheatley's Free Fire, and Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. John Nix said The PTA, A Ghost Story by David Lowry, and Pat Healy's upcoming untitled film. Mikel Villoslada said Happy End by Hanukkah, The Killing of a Sacred Deer by Yorgos Lanthimos, and Star Wars Episode 8. Vigit said Molly's Game, Downsizing, and Wonderstruck, and then said Wait, and Song to Song. Daniel Hardy said Blade Runner 2049, the untitled Bigelow Detroit 70s epic, and the untitled PTA Daniel Day-Lewis fashion epic, which is the most information I've heard about that, and it makes me infinitely more excited. Vega comes at us and says, Aki Kurosami's... Oh, wait, nope, I almost used the wrong person's name. Aki Kaurismäki's The Other Side of Hope, PTA's movie, running theme, and then Michael Haneke's Happy End. Saudi Nerd said, 1, Justice League, 2, Blade Runner 2049, and 3, Dunkirk, and then Film Style Trend said, Lost City of Z, Blade Runner 2049, and Song to Song. And that is all the feedback that we got this week. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, and if you'd like to be involved next time, follow us on Twitter at @FilmStageShow.
I have to think Lost City of Z comes out very soon.
Right? I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that one, but I just thought it was coming very soon, so it didn't... I don't know.
Well, we'll find out. People have seen that, though, right? Like, that's... Like,
yes.
Yeah, that's why I didn't do it.
There was a pretty big New York screening... about a month ago, I believe.
Yes.
According April. IMDb, it comes out in April.
April 14th. Yep.
Yep.
All right. So that is the end of today's show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Let me remind you that we are brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema, where every day they introduce a new fantastic film for you to check out. And you can get a free 30-day trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage. That's 30 days. That means when you begin... you will have the entire lifetime of one of Mubi's selected movies to watch to your heart's content. You'll go through a full cycle. That's a pretty good slice of the Mubi pie. So check that out. Again, that's mubi.com/filmstage. Mubi, new year, no tagline. Let us know what you thought of our crazy thoughts and opinions by finding us on iTunes, giving us a comment and a rating, reaching out on Twitter at @FilmStageShow, or Facebook by searching for The Film Stage Show, and of course, going to thefilmstage.com and commenting on the episode page. If you have any ideas for topics that you want to hear about, train a dog to come and bark them to me in Morse code in honor of both John Wick 2 and A Dog's Purpose. Or you can just use those previously mentioned methods of contacting us. Speaking of contacting us, let's tell the fine people where you can be found between now and then. The next time we speak to them, Bill Graham.
You can find me writing fan fiction about the future alternate reality where Kathleen Kennedy allows Rian Johnson to make a $1 billion grossing Star Wars film that is incredible. Or... in our sad 2017 reality where Trump is president, at Cable BFG on Twitter, find me writing about movies at The Film Stage and freshfiction.tv.
You want to talk about sad Trump inauguration stuff. I live in DC. It's a goddamn zoo. I am getting to work from home though, so that's pretty sweet. Michael Snydell, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, where I will be sticking up for remakes of beloved films that should never be remade. Sundance is coming, and I am not going, but I will be reviewing a couple films there, which I have through the grace of the internet.
God bless online screeners.
So I have not watched them yet, but keep a lookout for reviews of Quest and Free and Easy.
All right. And you can find me on my personal site, dearfilm.net, where pretty soon I should be having a pretty extensive essay about how goddamn amazing The Hateful Eight is. You can also find me writing for The Film Stage at thefilmstage.com. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter, where I'll be live tweeting from my front row seat to the end of civilization and democracy as we know it. That is at Brian J. Rowan. That is also how you can find me on Letterboxd and various other things. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, check out Twitter and Facebook to vote on the Stagies. That'll be the next roundtable episode in 2 weeks. Between now and then, we will have a review for you. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. Have a good week. We'll be right back.